Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. There are many more podcasts available at our website, myfaithradio.com. And your support makes this possible.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. Thanks so much for joining us today. We are just snuggled in here watching the snow come down and enjoying this beautiful winter day here in Minnesota. I love it when it's snowing, but it's still kind of warm.
Yeah, that's going to change, though, real soon.
I know. It is going to change. That's why I just value these days. Even shoveling this morning wasn't so bad because I wasn't freezing, and although my toes are still a little bit cold. It's one of those things that we just enjoy here in Minnesota. I'm going to tell myself that.
That's right. That's all you can do, I think. It's partially mental, isn't it?
It's partially mental, yes. You just endure and say it's great. I remember a friend of mine telling me that at one point in time, that no matter what your life situation is, if you tell everyone it's great, you'll start to believe it.
Yeah, that's good. Well, what about even if you have kids that aren't doing what you say? Does that apply there? I don't know.
I was trying to employ that as well this morning because I asked my 13-year-old to help me shovel, and he was not very enthused to do it, but he did, and we got it done very quickly.
Oh,
so I'm hoping a life lesson was learned and logged away in his brain.
Yeah, you're doing something right, Joe. Good job.
I'm going to try. Well, what about you growing up, Ted? Did you have several siblings, a lot of siblings, one? What happened?
One older brother, 4 years older. That's it.
So do you remember your parents kind of engaging in a list of chores or things you had to do around the house?
Oh, yes. There's always usually a note, especially in the summertime. Mm-hmm. And one time my brother was fed up and he added to the list and he wrote things like solve Eleuther's 38th problem and all these weird things after it. My mom kept that one, so that was funny.
You do have to kind of have a sense of humor. And I remember doing a lot of chores. I had three siblings, three brothers, and it was funny because my dad, who did not have any sisters, would try to employ this, Joe, me, I need to do the wash the dishes, clean the house, do the laundry. And then my brothers had to do things like mow the lawn, shovel the driveway. And so he would try to kind of separate these into these male-female roles. And my mother would have nothing of it. She'd say, Joanne is completely capable of mowing the lawn.
Uh-huh.
She's completely capable. And so they had this little discussion happening very often. But I found that from having all of those things that we had to do and kind of participate as a family to keep, of course, our parents from going insane. I mean, four children, you must start to go insane a little bit with all of them things to do. But I call myself stubbornly self-sufficient. I don't know if that's a good thing or not.
I think that is a good thing. There's good qualities to that.
There are some good qualities to that, but sometimes I will purposely not ask people for their help because I need to do it myself. And sometimes that's a little toddlerish.
Yeah, well, you know, you want it done your way, then that's it. Gets done at least, right?
It does get done. Well, maybe you have a family of your own. You're trying to figure out why you are the way you are, or you have a family you're trying to raise. And in this age, a lot that we read and hear about is about this generation of kids and young adults who are feeling entitled. Maybe they don't feel like they need to participate, or maybe they don't feel like they need to chip in when it comes to household chores, and they want things done like I said, they want things done their way. Well, we're going to talk today to a mother of five who did a little experiment to see if she could rid her home of what she called youth entitlement. Her book is called Cleaning House, A Mom's 12-Month Experiment to Rid Her Home of Youth Entitlement. It's Kay Wills Wima I'm going to talk to today. And let me tell you a little bit about her. We'll have a hopefully an enjoyable conversation today, and humorous as well, if her book has anything to do with her sense of humor. Kay Wills Wima has five kids. They are age 8 to 19 now. One SUV with a lot of carpool miles. She holds a bachelor's from Baylor University and an MIM from American Graduate School of International Management. Before transitioning to stay-at-home mom, she held positions at the White House, the Starbucks Company, and the Bank of America. She and her husband, John, live with their family in the Dallas area. Well, welcome, Kay.
Well, thanks for having me.
It's great to talk to you. And like I said, I laughed many times when I was reading your book, and I took a lot of notes as well. My children are 10 and 13, and so I'm hoping they live to graduate.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I think you have to have a sense of humor through all of this anyway, too, you know?
It's true.
And those hopes of great things like graduating.
There are times, though, when my heart is filled with joy when one of my children will do something just out of the goodness of their heart or something they see needs to be done, whether it's picking up some food that has dropped on the ground or going out to shovel when they're not asked. And so I live with hope in my heart.
Isn't that the best, though? I do think it is. It warms your heart like nothing else when they just go do it on their own. And I do think, and I have found, well, to be true, that if you can do this stuff at home, you can do it anywhere, because it's so hard to serve like your siblings. And I don't know why that is, but it's, if you can love your family, you can love anybody, you know? And so, gosh, I've seen that in spades with the kids. And I think it does give you like an extra sense of great hope when they see the needs of somebody else and actually step in to take care of it, which is what it is at the end of the day.
Right. Just yesterday, I was talking to my 10-year-old, and he was playing his iPod Touch, and he just looked up from his iPod Touch, but he kept playing. And my 13-year-old jumped in and said, "Put down your iPod. Your mom is talking to you." I thought I was going to throw up. I was laughing so hard because I've repeated that to my older son so many times, and here he was just being a parent to my younger child. It was very funny.
That is funny.
Although sometimes things come out of my mouth and then I hear my mother's voice in my head, and then I never know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but most of the time it's a good thing.
Let's hope it's always just, you know, they loved us enough to, and we apparently love ours enough to say the same thing.
Yes.
It never changes.
Well, tell me a little bit about why you decided to take on this project of a 12-month experiment to rid your home of youth entitlement. What kind of led up to that?
Well, a lot of frustration. Well, not like, you know, I guess it probably was like a snowball building, but I didn't really realize it. You know, we had so many kids and they were just right on top of each other, and no one that I know would have labeled me as an enabling mom. I really didn't cover the sockets in our home. You know, it was sort of like, you can learn how to live in this environment, whether me change it. And they were, you know, so there were so many of them. And so I'd go to the park and kind of show them where the drop-offs were on those playground equipments and pretty much say, "Don't step off of that. It's going to hurt," you know? And then I'd sit on the bench and listen to the other mothers gasp as my toddler would go for the opening of some playground equipment that was way too old for his age, you know, because I always do that. And so I just wouldn't have put myself as a preparing the road for the kid person until one morning. And I walked in and I was so frustrated from a conversation I'd had with one of my kids, who really and truly, we were the meat in a luxury car sandwich on one of the roads here in Dallas, where there was a Porsche on our left and a Lexus on our right and a Maserati in front of us. And that kid said, "Which one of those would I look good in at 16? And I just about threw up. I probably swallowed the vomit in my mouth, you know, going, "How can you say that? That's so gross." And I went home and all the dishes were out and all the beds were unmade. And I sat on the couch having a moment going, "What am I doing? They're looking to me to do everything for them." And I was, you know, it hit me. First of all, the lack of independence that's coming with that type of training. And secondly, that I was sort of grooming them to look to the state to serve them. And then I was like, I am the state. They're looking to me to do everything. And I was like, I'm grooming socialism and I don't even believe in that. And then that was it. I was like, this is so over, you know, because when you make mom mad, well, everything changes.
It's true. It's true.
It is so true. And I really went around my house. I had read a book earlier that year, kind of a funny little book that involved somebody changing something in their life by the month. And I was like, well, I'm just going to do it. You know, I'm just doing it. They're so learning how to be in the kitchen and do everything in the kitchen. And I literally went through different parts of my house realizing that they may know that food comes out of the kitchen, and they may see it being made, but they aren't intimately involved in all that goes into a meal. And I really sat there thinking, I'm grooming them to have to lean on somebody else to do these things for them. And then I don't want them to have to do that. There is so much hard in life. The last thing I want is for them to be lacking in just basic life skills. And that's how it started, really. And I didn't mean anything by it until I started to realize what I was stealing from them by doing things for them, You know, and what society is stealing by that, you know, by grooming an idea that they are owed or they deserve things.
Hmm. Well, that seems...
If that makes sense.
It makes sense. We read about that. Like I said in the opening, we seem to read about that a lot, that this current generation of really the ages of your children, which is anywhere from elementary school through the middle part of your 20s, are kind of getting this reputation that they are entitled.
Yeah, it's a shame, isn't it? Because they're people. These are really terrific people.
Mm-hmm.
And they are one thing that since I started the experience, I've gotten to speak a lot of places and really contemplate it and talk about it. And these kids are so technologically advanced, so much more so clearly than we ever were, because they didn't exist. You know, they think we're from the dark ages because we didn't have a cell phone. Like when my kids were born, had no cell phone. And if I did, you had to punch buttons to text, you know, numbers. It was way too complicated. And so for these kids, it's second nature. And it's one of those things, if you equip these kids to be able to see mountains as opportunities rather than obstacles, it's sort of like, watch out. You have no idea what they will be capable of. And I think it is. It's one of these things where from the home we can help turn the tide, because it sure isn't turning for them in other venues as it might have been for us when we were kids.
Mm-hmm. So you kind of put your skills to work here. I mean, you have a management degree. You've worked at the White House, for goodness sake, and you wrote out this plan, a 12-month plan. Tell me a little bit about how you came up with those 12 items that you wanted to make sure your kids knew.
On that flaky day, really and truly, I sat on the couch and went through the rooms in my house. There was the kitchen behind me, and I was like, okay, they clearly do not know how to function in a grocery store, so we'll be doing that. I started low. You know, their beds, their rooms were such a mess. And it was one of those things when they were little, I know I taught them how to do all that stuff, but then it just got to be easier to do it myself. I'm just saying, putting all those Legos away, they looked so beautiful the way I would put them away, you know, color-coded and in lovely boxes. Of course, they don't do that. They don't put it away that way. And so I just was like, I'm putting it away myself. And I guess because there were so many, I wasn't really thinking about it. And so I started low in my house. Everybody else's homes are different. You know, there are different things that you want your kids to know. For mine, I wanted them to understand and embrace hospitality, you know. So one of the months that we did was hosting a party. They had to really host a party with invitations, thinking it out, planning their menu, all those kinds of things. And then the basic things that are a part of our life, and that includes the laundry, you know, that it actually is washed and put away, and that it really never does stop, you know, because they would say to me, I did it yesterday. And I'm like, yes, you could do it 3 times today, and it will happen again and again and again and again, which there are such good life lessons in that. You know, not everything is exciting. Not everything is glitzy. People go to work. It's not exciting every day, but you do it, and you continue to do it. And therein it grooms them to be in that zone rather than thinking there has to be some grand thing involved. And it's really just so much of it is just a part of life. And then the more important aspect of it is that there's always somebody on the other side receiving the work that you're doing. And to me, that was one of the best things that came out of it, was an increased awareness of the fact that the people that are around them actually are human beings that care, you know, and it's been there's been so many good things that have come from it.
Well, it's such a great way to bless someone else, and we really do need to give our kids opportunities to do that, and give ourselves opportunities to do that as well, because it's such a wonderful feeling knowing that you have assisted someone in something, maybe a mundane item on their list. We're talking with Kay Wills-Wyma today. She's written a book called Cleaning House, A Mom's 12-Month Experiment to Rid Her Home of Youth Entitlement. We'll talk about what a couple of her experiments entailed and how they worked out. We'll give her the floor when we come back on Connecting Faith. And if you're listening today and you think maybe you have a story of your own you'd like to share about an experiment that has worked in your own home for kind of nipping in the bud that youth entitlement that sometimes exists, well, give us a call and let us know. We'd love to hear your story. We'll be right back on Connecting Faith. back to Connecting Faith. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. I'm Joe Bender, and very thrilled today to talk to Kay Wills Wima, who's written a book called Cleaning House, a mom's 12-month experiment to rid her home of youth entitlement. Kay has five children aging from ages 8 to 19. And, Kay, one of my favorite chapters to read was How to Cook and Clean a Kitchen. Because you're very funny, but your kids' reactions were even more funny. So how did that go for you? Tell us how that went when you first instigated the how to cook and shop, even shopping.
Oh, yes. So much, isn't there?
I mean, that is bold.
Oh, my goodness. Well, okay, when I started this whole thing out, I did ask, you know, it's helpful to walk the road with people. I'm a firm believer in that. And so I went to a gal who was older than me and asked her, if you're going to change something in your life, how do you, you know, what's the best way to do that so that it really works? And she said, well, for sure, start with a family meeting. So that's the first thing we did. And she said, don't talk at them, which I'm not sure we'd ever had a family meeting where we didn't talk at them, you know. And she said, involve them, include them in some way, shape, or form so that they will own it. So we did. And so our first month was, you know, bedroom and clutter control, which I sort of told them this is happening. The second month, when it hit the kitchen, I was like, okay, here's the deal. And to me, there were four functioning people that were involved in this, because my littlest was three, I think, then. And so, you know, believe it or not, three-year-olds can cook. I've had so many moms text or email me. It's just unbelievable what their three-year-olds are doing, and which is pretty convicting and exciting all at the same time. And so I said to them, here's the deal. We will be doing dinner. You will be doing dinner. Each one of you will participate in this, and this is what dinner involves: cooking, cleaning up before, cleaning up after, and coming up with the menu, and going to the grocery store, you know, all of it. And here's the amount of money that you have, your little budget, because they need to learn what a budget is. And because training life skills really involves hands-on experiments. You know, it's like learning how to drive a car or run a marathon. You have to practice it. And so I was like, okay, great. We're practicing this because they will experience this during their lifetime in spades every day, you know. And so if I had been them and what I thought they should do, I would have, like, put all four of them on different tasks every night. And yet in my mind, I was like, okay, like my friend said, let them be involved. So I let them choose. Would you like to cook, you know, be responsible for the meal yourself the whole night? Or would you rather, like, split it up, which sounded easier to me? And they were so quick to jump on, we're doing it ourselves, you know? And then the oldest was quick to take Thursday night, you know, because that would be technically the last night of the week. And there they went, and the poor youngest, not having any clue what we were even talking about, he was eight at that point, seven or eight. And he was like, he got the first night to be able to do all this stuff. And I also gave them the option to purchase the meal out for everybody, which they would get to use the budgeted money and their own money, because, you know, it costs so much more, or we could go to the grocery store. Well, the oldest, of course, chose to purchase the meal, which was a total disaster. Mm-hmm. I mean, from the get-go. And I don't know if that's the part you're talking about, because they're just kids. They're people. So there's hilarity on every side. But just even the kid that chose to purchase the meals, it was a disaster, you know, because, of course, they hated it. And everything that went on was terrible, because I don't know about you, but when we go out to eat, often we will sit in the driveway for 5 minutes trying to decide where to go, which I can't even imagine that people would complain about where you would go out to eat, you know, and it's like, forget about it. And so I wanted them to experience that horrible feeling, and they did, which was lovely. But the littlest kid that stepped up to the plate, he was mortified and just so angry. And in the book, I use pseudonyms for all of them, and his name is Fury, because he truly is. That child lives it out loud, whatever it is. And he was so angry that he was going to have to cook dinner, and the meanest mom in the world, and went on to tell everybody all the way. He slow walked from the house to the car, and then from the car to the grocery store, complaining at the top of his lungs, my mom is so mean, she's so mean, into the grocery store where everyone can see us. And then the great stuff started. We bumped into a neighbor gentleman, an older gentleman with bags in his hands, and he looked at my kid, and he's like, what are you doing, you know? And he was like, my mom's so mean. She's making me cook dinner. Nobody I know has to cook dinner. This is awful. She's horrible, you know? And he had picked up his little cart because he knew he was going to have to do it. And my friend said to him, look at me. What do you see these bags? These bags are for our dinner. I'm going home to cook our dinner. It's part of life. Snap out of it. And the kid kind of started to breathe. I really think he did think that I was horribly mean because his friends don't cook dinner. And I don't think it dawned on him that really and truly it's something we do, and it actually can be fun. And it was really, we turned the corner. I had to explain to him what the grocery store was because clearly I had not done that. I may be horrible and have possibly gotten even a babysitter at times to come sit in the car so I can run in and run out as a little neighbor girl. Isn't that terrible? And when we hit the Butters, as I explained to him, around the grocery store, it's cold on the outskirts, frozen in the middle, man-made in between that, you know, like a flight attendant explaining the the workings of the plane. And he got to the butter, and there are a gazillion, amounts of butter. And he's like, why is there so much butter? Why are they different prices? And here's what's so interesting about these tasks. It's ridiculous. It's going to the grocery store. We're so used to it, we forget about it. But right there was an economics lesson at the butter, because it really was. Well, here are the different prices. Here's how you know how much it costs per house. Some are organic, some are not organic. Some are store, you know, the store brand, some are a national brand. And then to allow him to, in his head, start to calculate out how much money he has, what he's going to spend it on. And it really was at the butter that I lost him. He joined in, he bought what he wanted, and he was off getting the stuff he wanted for his meal by himself. And it was fascinating to watch what happened. Just even in that moment, the independence that was introduced to him, even though he bellyached and complained the whole way, even though today he would bellyache and complain. I'm not kidding. That part never stops. I don't know why.
But now he'll know how to make himself a couple meals while he's complaining.
Right. And kids, you know, you sit there and go, well, we don't have enough time, because that's a huge excuse. I just don't have the time. It's so hard. Well, it's time consuming slightly, you know, not even as much as we think at the beginning to teach them, but it actually saves us time. And then they are introduced to things like a crock pot. You know, if they have a soccer game in the afternoon, we'll start it in the morning. And little kids can make a meal, because some of your meals involve simply opening cans and pouring them in. You know, it's not like it has to be terribly hard. And then the beauty of, I mean, it just like kept going and going. He talks to the checkout gal, who normally doesn't engage with her customers, and yet it was a kid, so she's engaging. So there goes interpersonal communication skills, which so many parents are frustrated that their kids are on phones all day long. Mm-hmm. And it's like right there in the grocery store, people talking to people, and there's life in that. And then to watch him set the table, cook the meal, it was beautiful.
We're talking to Kay Wills-Wyma today just about trying to teach kids some responsibility at home, the benefits that it brings. We're going to talk more about that when we come back on Connecting Faith. We'll be right back.
What about John Mayer, man? He's going to have kids someday in the car. I think you might write this song.
You better quit all that complaining. Don't want to hear another sound. If I hear any more whining, I'm gonna turn the car around. You got a little television and you had enough to eat. If you don't change your disposition, I'm gonna leave you on the street. So I'm waiting for your attitude to change. I keep on waiting for your attitude to change. You say that I ain't fair. I guess that would matter if I care. So I keep on waiting for your attitude to change.
That was Tim Hawkins with his little version of parenting. We do have to have a sense of humor sometimes. And I remind myself of that often, that Sometimes my kids will say things that I know I said to my parents, and somehow they didn't chastise me for it. So I try not to chastise them, knowing that it will turn around, right? Tell me it'll turn around.
I think so. I do. I do think a big part of it, I mean, it's all so much stemming from love. You know, I look at some of the stuff we do, and it's because we love them. I mean, we just love them. And I think it's an interesting environment that we live in right now. It's, you know, with social media the way it is, you see everything that everybody's doing. It's very hard to navigate a lot of the pressures that we feel. And you know, parenting's weird. It's like become a competitive sport. I mean, it could be an Olympic activity, really. And I think a lot of that makes it challenging for us. And another thing in the environment that has offered something different than we would have had when we were kids is online grading systems, where you can know all day, every day, mm-hmm. what's going on with your kids. And there is kind of an understood agreement that the parents really will step in and make sure the kids' homework is done and all that kind of stuff. And it gets weird. And when we do that, and one thing I learned from the get-go of this is that in my efforts to take care of things for them, they hear very loud and clear the message that they can't do it. You know, it's like, here, try this. And when you step in and do it for them or go back and check everything, they hear it and they know it, honestly, just like we do or we would. I don't think it would take much for any of us to think of like who our favorite boss was or favorite coach or favorite teacher. And it's highly likely on the other side of that is somebody that really thought you could do more than you thought you could and put you to the test.
My junior hire and I were just looking over my grades from high school because we were talking about grades, and he said, well, did you ever get a C? I said, I did. I got a C. I don't remember what subject it was, but I remember getting the C. And so I pulled out my report card, and sure enough, I got a C in science, chemistry or something. And then the end grade for the end of the year was an A. And he said, well, did you hate that teacher? I said, no, I loved him because he gave me a C, and then he showed me how to get an A. And it was a gift.
Yeah, and here's, like, your parents, we got 6 weeks grades. And so it was very unlikely that your parents knew. Okay, so there wasn't even an opportunity to race in and save. And it is so hard not to go in and save those kids, but we have learned over and over and over that failure often paves the road to success. And grit is incredibly, they have realized, important in kids and in people, human beings' ability to be successful in whatever realm that looks like. And grit is the ability to fall down and get back up and get back up and get back up. But how will they ever get it if they're never allowed to fall? It's scary. It's scary to let your kid fail.
It is scary, but there's also a lot of pressure on the teachers as well. I know when I'm teaching, the students expect that the grades are posted the very evening that they have turned something in. And if that doesn't happen, they are stressed about it because they want to know and they feel entitled to know, kind of to use your word, that they think that they should be able to know exactly what they got, why they got it, the moment that they turned it in. And so it is very different from when we grew up because you're right, we may not find out until the end of the quarter how we're doing.
Yeah, and you know what? Things take a little while, and we know that just even from our religious background. You know, very rarely does the Lord work in like one day increments. You know, it's usually 7 years or 40 years. I mean, it's not something that's instant, and so allowing even all of us to be able to lean into just the slow cooking of life, and that it's okay. And so I think fear is a big reason why we are just compelled to step in and save or manipulate or finagle or bubble wrap. And it's hard in this day and age when everybody knows everything that's going on pretty much to the minute, including in our own lives as we put it on social media.
Well, and I found one other thing that's very difficult to teach younger people, our children, is that sometimes people who are, I'm going to just arbitrarily say 40 and over, would rather get a phone call than a text. And so that ability to communicate, whether it's a future boss that they're communicating with or a coach or a teacher, that sometimes it's not enough to send an email, but having a conversation is something that's going to actually make them remember you and maybe be a little softer to whatever problem it is that you have, that having that conversation is a very important skill to learn. I know that you dealt with that a bit in your book. How do you encourage your kids to have conversations with other adults and learn to really work that to their benefit?
Well, I think even beyond working it to their benefit, I think as a human being, it actually helps. It's interpersonal communication, talking with each other. Because, like Joe, we aren't even in the same city. We're not even in the same state. And yet, I mean, it's encouraging to me to just even chat with you, like to chat, which would be so different than us texting or emailing each other, because we're created for that. We're created for relationship. And so, yeah, you know, in my book, one of the months was errands, right? Because we all have to run errands. And again, I think they think that you just run in and get it and that, you know, it just appears. Clean clothes from, you know, the laundry service just appear or whatever it is. And so I did that month just because I was like, man, everybody has to run errands. I didn't really think about what was entailed in that until I started watching them do it. You know, of course, I had to kick them out of the car, even though I'd be sitting like right in front of whatever the establishment was. I was like, just get out and go do it. And what would occur inevitably is them speaking to somebody, which actually made the person they're speaking to feel better and makes them feel better. And so they walk out of the car grumpy and crabby, and they walk back in really sort of enlightened and encouraged to a certain extent, not because it's like this is some end-all. It's just regular life. And so, yes, that needs to be a part of their life. I don't know why they don't call each other. It's bizarre. And yet they don't. They text and email, and that is their mode. But they feel better when they actually talk in person. And so that has helped our household, because people will say, you know, how do you help your kids on especially navigate the internet and these sites and stuff? And so it has made it easy for me to put words on something, and I can say to the kids, you know, if they're on their Instagram or Twitter or whatever it is, and likes, no likes, shares, you know, that kind of drives them. And I can say, well, they come in from an errand, and I can say, how did that make you feel talking to that person? And inevitably, it's like, well, I really didn't want to, but gosh, it made me feel good. And then I can say, how do those likes and shares, and how does that make you feel? And it doesn't make them feel good. And so it naturally moves them away from that venue because they like the interpersonal communication better. It's sort of like with online gaming. Throw some regular board games into your home, or card games, or anything that involves, you know, interpersonal communication, and they love it. I mean, it's more fun in many ways. It's not saying the other is bad, but if that's all you're doing on the other, then it does lend toward isolation, and it does lead people towards aloneness and towards self-centeredness. And that's the problem with entitlement, is that it makes me think about me. And it makes me think I'm owed and that the world revolves around me. And the truth of the matter is no one is happy that way. It's called narcissism. And it's nothing that brings joy to anyone's life. And again, we can go to scripture for that one. Mm-hmm. You know, loving others really is the secret sauce of life.
Well, and with every conversation that you're talking about, just encouraging your kids to have, their learning that people don't need to be scary. I mean, I came downstairs once in my, just a couple of weeks ago, and my 10-year-old was crying on the couch with nothing, no TV on, nothing was going on. He was in the dark crying, and I said, "What's going on?" And he said, "Mom, I was supposed to do an assignment and I forgot. Aww. And it's due tomorrow." And I said, "Well, what's the assignment?" And he said, "I have to write a paragraph." And I said, "Oh, okay, what does it need to be on?" And he said, "I have to talk to a grandparent about something about their childhood." And I said, "For goodness sake, it's only 7:45. All of your grandparents are awake. Call one.
We can do it.
We can make this happen." And his eyes kind of lit up, and he chose the grandparent to call. And that grandparent could have talked for 45 minutes. Of course, he didn't want to do that because he had an assignment to do. But it was just such a great experience for him to find out, I have a problem. I've messed up. I forgot something. Oh, wait. People will help me. I can do this. And Grandma was thrilled to have a conversation with him and help him with an assignment. And we got it done. He was in bed on time and everything worked out okay. But he probably wouldn't have known that if he wouldn't have gotten to that point where he thought, I have really messed things up.
Well, and it's interesting because you stepped in and did what I think is one of the key things of parenting, which is training. I mean, you really... You talk to him. You didn't just, because I don't think it's like just kicking him out. Good luck. Do it on your own. It's like training them. It's like a bicycle. You don't really see teenagers riding their bikes with their parents running alongside, you know. But there was a point in their life where the parent kind of taught them, here's how you do it. And they let them fall. And they let them get back up because they knew it was important for them to be able to do that. And it's the same thing with just these regular areas of life. It's like, let's teach them how to do it. And show them, stand off at the side, and then get the heck out of the way. Mm-hmm. And because they can do so much more than they or we think they can. And kids, just like everybody else, they thrive on high expectations. You set the bar up there and let them try, you know. And it's interesting to watch what happens. And another thing that comes from it is that you just might get to get a little taste of what your child's gifting is, which usually is different than our own. But it's hard to know that if they aren't allowed to kind of ride their bikes, you know, whatever it is that they're good at. And it sure can be scary. So it was scary when they learned how to walk those bikes, you know, ride the bikes. But they need that feeling of adventure. There's actually studies that have been done that show that the kids need to be able to know what fear is so they can lean in and conquer it. There are actually parks in the UK where parents are not allowed, and they have things in there. They don't have toys or play equipment. They have logs and ropes and things to swing from and trees to climb, and they even have matches with kindling for fire so they can learn how to light a fire and how to do it properly. It's just very interesting because it's like not erring on the side of safety, 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 which is good. It's, you know, it's one of these things. It's like you can't take either side, like let the pendulum swing all the way over, but just hit it in the middle with a little just common sense, I guess. I don't know. It's a tough way to navigate because everybody's probably looking and judging at the same time too. You know, it's terrible. Let's encourage each other, folks.
I think we have one of those parks here in Minnesota. It's right down the road from my home where I grew up because parents were never there either.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting?
We made it. We made it. But sometimes I'm surprised that we did.
I think everybody feels that way.
I'm talking to Kay Wills-Wima today. We're talking about ridding your home of youth entitlement. If you're listening today and you say, I want to get my hands on one of those books or maybe give one of those books to someone that you know, do it gently. You can give us a call at 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. Kay has graciously provided a few to give away. We'd love to get that in your hands. Or if you have a question or comment, we'd love to hear that as well. 877-93-FAITH. We will be right back on Connecting Faith.
I had to write a Jason Mraz song the other day for my kids. Oh, I found something under your bed, I smelt it. An old bologna sandwich with some cheese that had melted. Fell right through the cracks. And it's getting funky bad. Go get a paper towel and some Febreze. Open up a window, man, that stinks. Get down on your knees and clean that rug, rug, rug. Oh, it's time to fumigate your bedroom, boy. It cannot wait. Good Lord.
He must have boys.
He's so funny. I think I went to one of his concerts here, and my face hurt so bad from laughing. I just couldn't even believe it.
Oh, So speaking of kids who might have rooms that smell, I noticed that now you have a college-aged boy, and I'm wondering how all of your groundwork has it brought in a lot of favorable activities now that he's alone? Or not alone, but
well,
out of your house?
Well, it's so funny that you would, like, the rooms that smell, it starts at, like, 10, don't you think?
Oh,
it's
yes,
shocking.
I know.
And how? I just don't understand it. It's really, you need a gas mask walking into the boys' rooms. Terrible. Oh, and, you know, it's interesting. I find for myself that it's good to focus on the things that have changed and the good stuff that happened, because I could focus on, oh, it's not done. There's always more. There's always more. And so I really have to stop myself often and go, okay, now what are they doing that really are the steps in the right direction, where I really don't involve myself and focus on those things? Because I don't know, for me, and sometimes I will make it like it's a checkoff list, as if that's what parenting is, you know, mm-hmm. that, oh, phew, I got through it, and we did all this right. And I keep reminding myself that at the core of all of this is truly loving your kids and how you love your kids. And loving them by believing in them. We have had hiccups and blips and, you know, moving forward, moving backward, you name it. I do hope, and I tell myself all the time, they know how to do all this stuff. They know how to do it. They are kids. And it is interesting in those teenage years. It mm-hmm. just is. And so it's like those seeds, which I think, again, is often a part of parenting. We plant, we water, we fertilize, we water, we fertilize, we water. And maybe or maybe not will we see a lot of the growth right now. And I don't know. Is that part of, you know, I sit there and think, Lord, is it just part of the faith road that you just go, yes, we, to the best of our ability, with our hearts in the right place, we have tried to equip these kids so that they can do what you have prepared in advance for them to do. And I don't know. I hope the answer is yes. I'm so grateful for that conversation and that day that we had in that car, because I didn't realize that I was enabling my kids. Mm-hmm. And I'm so thankful for the goofy experiment that jump-started something which I'm very, very glad has happened in our home. And it's gone so much more than just the activities in our home, but even with each of their relationships with the Lord, you know, that they would really own it themselves. And I'm grateful for that. And it is filled, as that book is, with the good, the bad, and the ugly, because there are five, and I am 100% flake. I'm terrible at follow through. I forget everything. I forget, you know, this year at school began with several calls from the school, you know, because I'd forgotten my kid. I'd forgotten school had really even started. There he sat at the front desk waiting for me. But I thought, you know what, he's patiently waiting, that kid, instead of going, where is she? How dare she? You know, that kind of thing, because he's kind of used to it. And I love that they see the people around them now a lot more than they used to. And I sit there and think, if that's what's going to come on the other side, then that's good. And so I hope the same for the homes as the parents that each one of us are. I am not type A, but man, I'm glad for those type A parents, because those are the ones that are going to be, you know, really running the world, you know. Mine may be a little more creative artsy. I don't know, but may they each be, you know, be equipped to be able to function in the gifting, the unique gifting that they each have.
Well, and as we go through this as parents, you weave in your book, throughout your book, you have just a list of women you called your ironing board experts, the people who encourage and inspire and give ideas to and kind of either pull or push you along the way. Talk about just the importance of having those people in your life to kind of do this life with that is so challenging as
a
parent.
Boy, it is definitely, we should not be walking it alone. That's for sure, which goes back again to that we were created for relationship. And to be able to have these people that you can be authentic with, and for me, I so desperately wanted these women to be able to say to me, this is a red light, you know, go get help. or this is yellow light, or this is regular. Because especially when they are in those teenage years, just the same way they are when they're in the toddler years, and you have them, you know, pulling every item off the shelf at Target and throwing a tantrum, and some sweet person comes up to you and is like, oh, just enjoy every minute of it. You'll blink and it's gone, you know, and you're like blinking to your hardest so that it might disappear. You know, it's like, oh my gosh, save me. But the person that says that to you knows it. And we need that when we're in the trenches, for someone to say, by the way, enjoy this because it is going to be gone. And so that you go, yes, let me just, you know, I need to be able to stay in this situation. And Jody Capehart, who's a great, great gal here, she's just given me so many little tidbits of wisdom. And one of them I think of often in those teenage years. And she'll say, don't engage. Like when they start throwing these arguments at you that mean nothing and that you will never win because they're nonsensical. Like there is nobody's making sense. And she'll say, don't get in the middle of that. You lose every time. Everyone loses. Just, you know, and she's saying, don't not love your kids. Just don't get in the middle of that stuff. And I think about it all the time. And I'll be like, I'm Teflon. It's just rolling off of me. You know, I'm just here. And we will get through this on the other side when they can talk to you. And those tidbits are so helpful because in the moment you could think that you were really somewhere along the way, all wheels had come off. And it's not the case. It's just a momentary blip. And those people that are on the other side are so great to say, mm-mm, don't let that define your moment, because just stick with it. Stick with your guns. And it's very important to have those people in your life, and they're there. You just have to open the door and invite them in.
That's just sage advice from one mom to another. That I'm Teflon comment is one of those things I'm going to write in my journal as things I thought I'd never have to say as a mom.
I really do that. The car going, just let it roll off, let it roll off. Because they do. They hit you with these ridiculous arguments that make no sense. But you won't win. You can't you can't convince them of something in the heat of the moment.
Oh, I love that. Well, Kay, you are also coming back to Connecting Faith in a couple of weeks to talk with Susie Larson. I'd love for you to just give our listeners just a sense of what you're going to be chatting about. I know it's your book that you wrote last year called I'm Happy for You, sort of, not really. So if you can just give us kind of a sense of what that's about so we can get people to tune back in a couple of weeks.
Well, it really came from this material. As I've spoken different places, like I said earlier, this competitive parenting thing is bizarro. And when we started to flesh that out, we started to realize that the core of that one is comparison. And comparison does everything possible to rob us of contentment and joy in life. And what can we do to arrest it, you know, and to thrive in the midst of this environment that is just on steroids with comparison, and for us, but gosh, again, to be able to equip our kids, they really live in it. God bless them.
Well, and sometimes we join them in that. When I can scroll through Facebook, and it's mostly information about our kids and what they're doing, and it does cause you to think, wait a minute, I'm not doing that with my kids.
Yeah, isn't that funny? Mm-hmm. And there's actually a term now, a clinical term called Facebook depression, because you get on it feeling one way and get off a little bit less happy. And a lot of it is because it's a highlight reel. It's funny, just coming off Christmas. It's like Christmas card letters all day, every day.
Although some of those Christmas card letters are funny.
That's true.
I think some people sit down and say, I'm going to write the anti-Christmas card message so everyone feels good about their family.
Yes, I call it missionary. For me, it's missionary dressing. I like to wear it, be underdressed, so everybody else feels good at the event, you know, because at least they're not me.
It's very kind and very generous of you. Well, if you could, would you be willing to just pray for those moms or parents who are listening today and just want to be encouraged that, like you just said, this will end, the glory will come, but we need to get through it and take a big breath. If you could just pray for those moms, I would just really appreciate it.
Oh, I do. I pray for, Lord, we just thank you for the gift that you've given us in children, and especially in the ability of, and capacity to love them and to maybe grasp how much you love us. thank you that you don't always step in. Thank you for your patience and your guidance and your compassion. And I just pray that you will gift us with the same spirit so that we can do that for our kids, that they may be raised up to be mighty warriors for your name's sake. And I thank you that we never, ever have to walk this road alone. And so we just ask your blessings in Christ's name. Amen.
Kay Wills-Wyma, thanks so much for joining us today. If you've been listening to this show and you just heard part of it but you want to hear the rest, you can go to our website at myfaithradio.com. Just click on Connecting Faith, and there you will find a podcast of this show and many others. Thanks so much, Kay.